Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. I'm with Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. I'm chuckling, Ryan, not to be that guy or that gal, but I just realized, maybe you can tell I just woke up. My hair, wow. We come to you raw on the Hot Lava. Ryan, first series in the book, and then we had this odd off day, so I woke up way too early, and then I went back to sleep, knowing that I'll be up for the next, you know, whatever, 18, 20 hours. So here we are. What would you like to discuss now that we are three games plus a reflection day into the season?
Yeah, Padres are 1-2. They lost the first two, Thursday and Friday, rallied to win Saturday. To me, not a particularly surprising first series of the season, given the pitchers who they were facing. Kevin, just your general thoughts on how they did in games number 1-3.
Well, yeah, you're right. Like, that was the thing, not to say, oh, they didn't have a chance against Tarek Skubal, Framber Valdez, Jack Flaherty. But, you know, they beat the guy that you thought they would be able to get to. And let's be honest, most nights, if they can have that kind of approach, there are far more starting pitchers in this league like Flaherty than Skubal. So, you know, I'll take that out because that's how I choose to look at things. They had a certain approach versus Skubal and Valdez and a different approach against Flaherty. And that's, I thought this was a fascinating series for that. They felt like they did well against Skubal, just not well enough. You know, it's funny. I did the, it was six innings and zero runs and, or one run and, you know, he gave up three hits or whatever. And I, whatever the parameters were, I looked it up. The guy's made 63 starts, one third of them. I just hope you know how preposterous that is. One third of his starts have been what he did Monday night or wow. on Thursday night. Like, wow. That's how good he is. So, again, you got to find a way to beat those pitchers. I'm not making any excuses for the Padres, but to your point, yeah, that's how that first series went. I know I focused offense there, and we'll get heavy into the pitching here, but that's my big takeaway, because the obvious one is, yeah, let's talk about the starting pitching, but my big takeaway is that, like, I liked what I saw out of the offense.
Yep, the team could be 2-1. Jeremiah Estrada really struggled to find the zone on Saturday, and it was, you know, a late bullpen issue leads to a Tigers win there. Is any cause to be concerned? I know it's one outing, but any cause to be worried, especially with Jason Adam not ready to pitch yet?
When his splitter is not working, then yeah, there's cause to be concerned for Jeremiah Estrada. And there was times, especially the first, I don't know, two thirds, three quarters of spring, that was the case. And then, you know, he didn't allow, I think he allowed one run in his like 9 or 10 spring appearances, but like the guys he was facing, he's good enough. He was going to get out there. Well, you know, you go into the regular season, you're facing a really good lineup and you don't have your command. You're screwed in the major leagues. Most of the time, especially a Tigers team who wasn't overly selective, but really smart hitters and really good hitters. So not cause to be concerned, but not cause to be concerned quite yet, Ryan. You were down Jason Adam. You are, in my opinion, not worth very much, but you were smartly not going to use Mason Miller for more than one inning. So you were in, and you, because of what happened the night before and with having to use certain relievers and all, you said, okay, we are going to get two innings out of Adrian Morahone. And yeah, Adrian Morahone gave up a lead as well with an inherited runner thanks to a Mariano Machado error. So you used Adrian Morahone for two innings. You had to use Jeremiah Estrada in that situation because Jason Adam wasn't he's inactive. He's on the injured list, pitching for AAA El Paso right now on a rehab assignment. Should be back April 6th. But so that's just what you're dealing with.
Yep. Kevin, justifiably so. I think the story on opening day was Nick Pivetta's inability to get out of really the first inning.
And I wondered where you were going to go. Because yes. He was inability to do anything. Yes.
Right. Nick Pivetta in a big moment, really not rising to that moment. But counterpoint, I think they got pretty good starts Friday and Saturday from Michael King and especially from Randy Vasquez. You've been talking about Randy Vasquez since midway through spring, about how you think he's ready to take maybe that one big leap. He's in better shape. He's throwing harder. What did you see from him? And then we'll talk about Michael King.
Yeah, the good thing about Randy is, to me, when you do what you are, not what you're going to say you're going to do, because Randy doesn't say stuff like that, but when you do what other people say you're going to do, you come through. And Randy has done that like time and time again, not spectacular all the time, but he's been like a grinder. And now with a little bit extra velocity, which that coinciding with, and maybe a certain amount because of the extra velocity, having more trust in what has always been good stuff. And you don't need to be like a pitching scientist to know that. If a guy with a 94 mile an hour fastball was able to pitch as effectively as Randy Vasquez was for most of last year, then you go, gosh, he's got pretty good stuff, right? So you pair that with now, do batters start to adjust to Randy? Probably, but like he getting left-handers out, throwing harder, throwing to where he wants to in the strike zone. Like that was an excellent start by Randy Vasquez. And I would think we can't gloss over any concerns we have about elsewhere in the rotation or whatever. And I'm not going to place too much on one start, though that was a continuation for Randy Vasquez of what he did last year and in the spring. I would think that that would, as you said, counterpoint, like that's a balance to, okay, you know, maybe they'll be okay in the rotation.
Yeah, maybe they will be. And, you know, Michael King, I think your casual fan would look at his outing on Friday and go, yeah, that was pretty good, right? Pretty good. Given how bad he was in spring, to me, that's a reassuring start from him. Given how not healthy he was for most of last year, first with the shoulder, then with the knee. To see him come out and pitch the way he did, I think is very encouraging news. Because my goodness, they're going to need him. This is a starting rotation that, at least to begin the season, has some real holes and some real areas for concern.
Yeah, I think you're right for all those reasons, right? Like he was in Arizona, right? And the sinker can, you know, it may or may not play well there, and you know, got out of hand for him a few times, and he gave up a lot of homers, and yeah. Absolutely. And he says he didn't have his change. I saw some good ones, but I guess, you know, that's when you're Michael King and you go that, you know, that pitch needs to be better. Great. Because he had a pretty decent start having to rely so much on the sinker and not the change. It didn't get him out as much trouble as he would have liked to. And so I thought that was absolutely a really encouraging start. And, you know, again, like maybe the concerns that we all have about the rotation will come to fruition. But I thought there were two of the three nights where you said, okay, they're not Scooble and Valdez. So when I say can't ask for much more, yes, both Randy Vasquez and certainly Michael King were capable of more than they did, but like, that's a fairly typical season opening outing. What you saw from the Tigers two starters was not a typical season opening outing.
No, that's a great point. That's a great point. And Giants come to Petco Park, three-game series starting tonight as we record this. It's Monday. This is where I really start to get intrigued because we're talking about starting pitching. The Padres starting pitchers the next two nights are guys who, frankly, have been Padre killers over the years, guys who I think have a lot in the tank but have not been healthy, have not been consistent. That's Walker Buehler starting tonight and Germán Márquez going Tuesday. Let's start with Buehler. He was a little bit of a surprise making the team in the rotation, somebody who really bet on himself and it paid off. What did he show you in spring that leads you to think he might have some success in the rotation this year?
Right. I think you mean a surprise from wasn't with the team when spring training started. And then, you know, at the beginning is like, oh, does he really have it and all that? But I mean, the last 3 weeks, this guy was going to be on the team because he pitched really well in spring. You know, look, he's changed a couple things. He's gone back to a few things in terms of arm angle. And he has like accepted, it appears. He still, you know, he referred to his fastball at one point as, you know, that girlfriend that you still kind of pine for, right? He would love, it's like he never fails to say, yeah, I'm pitching, I'm making these, I'm happy with these. Man, you know, maybe the fastball will be able to use it more sometimes. Like it's still there for him, right? And when you used to be able to throw like Walker Buehler, and if the only time you watched Walker Buehler was when he pitched against the Padres, then you go, oh yeah, that guy was really good for 5 years. We'll see, right? Like if anyone, I'm big into, like Mike Schilt was, right? I'm big into body language. I'm big into a guy's presence and attitude on the mound. That's if he also has the stuff. You or I go out on the mound, I don't care what presence we have, right? We're going to get shelled. But you're Walker Buehler. A part of your effectiveness is the bulldog. And so I'm willing to believe that Walker Buehler can turn this into an at least, you know, serviceable, be a number four starter. At least I'm willing to believe that based on what I've seen and heard, that I'm expecting tonight to be, you know, again, first start, but I will not be surprised, I should say, if Walker Buehler gives him five quality innings, keeps him in the game.
Absolutely. And, you know, small sample size, and this was the old Walker Buehler, the guy who could throw 98. But Walker Buehler has a 2.18 career ERA and six starts at Petco Park. This is a guy who has traditionally really pitched well against the Giants as well. Our colleague Jeff Sanders points this out. He's 7-2 with a 2.79 ERA against the Giants in the regular season. Now, he was backed by a pretty darn good Dodgers team when he did that, right? He was getting run support. But I think two real reasons to think that he could be primed for potentially a turnaround season. Never underestimate how good it is to pitch at Petco Park, especially in the spring and not the summer. Some of those long fly balls are just long fly outs, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And pitching at night. And by the way, I believe it was six shutout last August, his third to last start for the Boston Red Sox. So, you know, he was pretty good last year against the Padres at Petco Park as well, without that Dodgers lineup behind him. And he's a different pitcher now, and we'll see, but like that's a guy that, and then the guy pitching on Tuesday, you know, I don't know what your expectations are, but, I wouldn't say mine are extremely high, but I will tell you that Germán Márquez has also made a pretty significant adjustment, moving to other side of the rubber, you know, a la Nick Pivetta and what that did for him last year. Now, slightly different. He doesn't quite have the stuff Nick does anymore, but Germán's been a good pitcher in this league, and who knows? We could be crediting Ruben Niebla with some Niebla magic. You know, we'll see.
He's somebody who always seemed to pitch fairly well against the Padres when he was a member of the Rockies. The numbers the last couple of years have not been good. Our Jeff Sanders reports here, you know, a 6.70 ERA ever since he had elbow reconstruction surgery in 2023. Again, struggled on the road and at Coors Field. This is not something we can necessarily just blame on Denver. But I'm intrigued. This is a guy who probably isn't in the rotation if Joe Musgrove is healthy. This is probably the guy who has the most to gain with a couple good outings here. I'm very intrigued to see how Germán Márquez pitches. Let's go through these pitching matchups real quick. We've already talked about Buehler. He goes up against Landon Roop for the Giants today or tonight. Landon Roop, third-year starter, pretty good since 2024, career 3.7 ERA. But, you know, Castellanos, Sheets, and Manny Machado hit three of the 13 home runs that Roop allowed last year. So I guess that's something.
And this is a guy that we've seen a lot. And so I've seen him be like, wow, this guy's really good. I always joke about how if I only see pitchers when they face the Padres, sometimes that's what I think of them, right? Like, that's what I think of them. I thought Walker Buehler was like the best pitcher in the major leagues for 4 years. But I've seen them shell Landon Roop. So, yeah, he's a guy. You are going to get Logan Webb later, but you're not getting him tonight. I don't think you get Robbie Ray. Fill me in here. I haven't looked at the Giants yet.
You get Logan Webb on Tuesday. So Giants are starting with the four-man rotation here. You know, they're 0-3. So this will be game five. It'll be Logan Webb's second start. Got cuffed around a little bit against the Yankees in the first baseball game of the 2026 season. Played last Wednesday. You know, hasn't pitched great against the Padres recently. Took two losses to them last year. ERA in the fours against them. But, you know, you'd have to think it's him versus Márquez. It's the Giants one versus the Padres five. Probably a favorable matchup if you're the Giants. And then Wednesday you go Adrian Hauser against Nick Pivetta. So that's a little different. Hauser's making his Giants debut, pitching here on Wednesday afternoon. Interesting guy. I mean, Kevin, you pointed this out during the offseason when we were talking about what kind of pitchers the Padres could afford. You said, you ever heard of Adrian Hauser? And I went, And you went, 2 years, $22 million. Like, he's an example of how rare and how expensive starting pitching can be, even if it's not particularly great starting pitching, frankly.
Yeah, and I've seen him pitch some really good games. But, yeah, like, that was like when people were talking and like, I honestly don't have a feel on how serious the Merrill Kelly offer was and like, you know, to them, and they got a lot of play because of the whole taxes situation. But it's like, the money that like we're it's just it's incredible what pitchers and the idea that they can pitch at their top of their game is what makes them worth it because it is just so hard to hit in this league. So I'm not saying Adrian Hauser is not worth that, but like that's a lot. And it's not a lot for a pitcher. It's not a lot for a pitcher.
I heard this once, you know, nobody's worth that amount of money, but if there's anybody, it's a frontline starting pitcher who's worth that kind of money. Right. I mean, just NFL quarterback level money. Right. For a starting pitcher. And he's going up against Nick Pivetta. Nick Pivetta allowed 6 runs in 3 innings in the opener. Again, not much more to say about that. It was pretty ugly all the way around from the first inning on, but has pitched well, went 3-0 against the Giants last year with an ERA of under 4. Again, you'd think that there would be a bounce back there for Nick Pivetta.
It would be difficult to be much worse. Like if it was that bad again, if someone like Nick, who you know, works really hard with the pitching coaching staff that he has, if there weren't fixes in between this start, like now that might be something, you know, raise your eyebrows at. So, and also again, first start, you know, probably just didn't handle that well. Because it wasn't like, I mean, it was just bad. It's just bad. That's all. And sometimes those are the ones you go, okay, that was just bad.
Right. And he wasn't making a ton of excuses either. You know, after the game, he's fairly stand up guy, stood up there and took it essentially.
Yeah. I mean, Nick's always going to do that. And you know, there really wasn't much to say. He'd had what, 2 hours to think about it too. By the time he's talking after the game, I mean, he wasn't a part of that game very much, except for he was the guy who gave up the first 6 runs. So that was a pretty big part of it.
Yep. Kevin, of the new guys, the new position players, hitters, is anybody stood out to you here through the first 3 games and anybody who you're intrigued by?
I'm still intrigued by Nick Castellanos, who has barely missed a couple balls. One of them, even though he barely missed it, would have been out probably in a few parks at least. You know, he got his first hit. He's now 1-for-6. So because he pinch hit the first 2 games. I've been intrigued by him since he came. He worked really hard to make himself into something of a first baseman. By the way, Gavin Sheets' defense is phenomenal. He is a first baseman, and which only makes you appreciate what he did last year going to left field even more, right? Like, I mean, he's a first baseman. He's really good. Because what did they do really? You know, I thought they had really good at bats throughout. For the most part, Sheets chasing a little bit. But I thought they really had good at bats, but am I missing someone, Ryan? Cause it wasn't like anything. I mean, Xander's hitting the ball hard for the most part. Manny, you know, drew some walks, I don't know. You know, they face some really good pitchers. It's like this. I went to the ballpark after opening day, and I'm always glad opening day's over. To me, it's just kind of the signal. Okay, now it starts. The grind starts now, right? Like going every day. Except for, you know, when you have the fourth day of the season off, which is weird. And I was just looking forward to getting through these first couple weeks so then we can start to draw some real conclusions. That's what I love about this game, that it's day after day after day. And pretty soon, okay, now we can divide it. What were those first 2 weeks like? I really enjoy that.
Yep, small sample size. And because it's a small sample size, something like Miguel Andujar, I don't think making much of an impact early on in the season. It's been 3 games. But I am curious. He's the guy I'm watching a little bit because I'm not saying he's redundant, Kevin. I'm not. But, you know, him and Nick Castellanos and to a lesser extent Ty France are all guys who could really take advantage of left-handed pitching.
And Andujar is supposed to, like 1,000 OPS practically over the last 2 years against lefties. So, yeah.
Right. And I'm not going to make more than you need to for a guy who's a platoon player. Right. But, you know, to me, how those guys hit against lefties, to me, if they can be pretty good to what they've been their whole careers, that really covers a blind spot the Padres had last year, which is, you know, they were very left-handed. not that there's anything wrong with being left-handed. Anyway, Kevin, I put you on the spot at the end of every episode, and why not do it today? Well, we'll pull this one from Twitter with an assist from our producer, John Kelly. Mason Miller's intro music and pyrotechnics. I know you love this stuff, but what do we make of it?
I should pay attention to it more, but I'm an old man who has a lot on his plate during these games, and I missed it in terms of it. How much it resonated with fans. Was that corn, I'm told? Yeah. And I mean, that was from my era. I should, you know, really probably, I did know that if I had been paying attention. I did notice it was something new. I had heard that Mason Miller was, you know, deciding on a new entry. And I love that other people love it. I do. I think it's another part of what makes baseball cool, right? Yep. Like, I love that first off, the game needs to attract more people, right? Like, I love it. I personally, you know, right. Oh, what was that? Okay.
All right. You will probably watch a closer's entrance complete with music and pyrotechnics 130 times a year, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when are closers used? Most of the time. Right. So, so you're right. You probably didn't notice that.
One of the other's team, right, is going to at home, right? Like,
I think it's interesting. And again, I'm of a certain age. When Trevor Hoffman's Hell's Bells is the standard, no matter how much fire you can spit into the sky, I think you're fighting for second place. But that's just me.
And absolutely, you know, Ryan, absolutely. And not that when this is like an interesting conversation, but I don't want us to veer off, and I'm 10 years older than you, into like it's sounding like we're get off my lawn or something. Right. But like, yes, like you kind of also, if you were from San Diego, like your standard is that, right? And like Mason Miller right now, if you didn't see the thing I wrote in the Padres Daily for Sunday, the dominance this man has had since the beginning of last September is like beyond belief. That would be including the postseason and the World Baseball Classic, like 0-for-53. People are against him with like 45 strikeouts. It's amazing. So this is not anything against Mason Miller, but it's like, this is his first full season with the Padres. Like, that was his first save of the season. Like, Trevor freaking Hoffman, man. Like, you know, there is one advantage to being old, and that this is just now you got me on a tangent. Damn you, Ryan. Is that you do start to appreciate, you know, like I say a lot, you know what the difference between a Hall of Famer and a future Hall of Famer is? Mm-hmm. One of them's in the Hall of Fame. So, like Trevor Hoffman's Hell's Bells is in the Hall of Fame. Right. Let's give it. But I'm telling you, let's revert. I was I don't know why the word tickled, just that's going to make me sound like I'm 10 years older than I am. But I was delighted the next day when I was scrolling social media and I saw how thrilled people were about Mason Miller's news thing. I thought, that's great. I missed it.
Yep. One of my kids, we were watching on TV Saturday, and one of my kids was like, hey, I think that's new. I was like, no, I'm fine. And then I go on Twitter immediately after. I may have been watching a little bit of basketball also on Saturday. Not that that means anything. But, you know, it's, I go on Twitter, and oh, my God, all anybody wants to talk about is corn. So how about that? And by the way, kudos to Mason Miller a little bit.
Yes.
Mason Miller is 20 years too young to care about the band Korn. And yet here we are. I like that.
Absolutely. I mean, when I did hear it then over, because you got to understand too, I feel like I've really kind of indicted myself here. You understand that that's the most stressful, important time of the game for me. Like, you know, like I'm writing and and like the story has to be sent. And so it's like, I've got a lot of going on, but like you go back and you listen to it and you go, hey, that kind of goes, man. Yeah, I like it. So kudos to Mason Miller.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Padres Giants 3-game series starting tonight at Petco Park. And then Kevin gets to go to Fenway and maybe see some snow. we'll talk about that on the next episode. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.